with the central left corner of the screen with all these other like massive like ex-military dudes, and you see James right there, just, you know, looking looking as tough as he possibly
can. Let's talk about that for a second. I don't know how I got cast for this.
Welcome to the Jurassic Collective Podcast, where we cover everything Jurassic, movie cars, and so much more. So saddle up and let's get this movable feast underway.
What's up, guys? Welcome to episode number 6 of the Jurassic Collective Podcast. Today's guest is straight from the silver screen. He has been on sets with actors like Tom Cruise, has torched creatures from the Upside Down in Stranger Things, and was on Vic Hoskins' engine operations team in Jurassic World. He owns a Jurassic Park Jeep 18 and is an official member of the Jurassic Park Motor Pool. Welcome to the show, James Smith. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me on.
Great, Graham. I'm glad to have you here. I'm glad we finally got all the little kinks worked out and ready to do a show.
Absolutely.
So, James, what made you build a Jurassic Jeep?
You know, I think like a lot of the members in the Motor Pool, I've just always been in love with the movie, the original Jurassic Park movie, just something so magical about it. And I think like a lot of people, it also spurred on a love at an early age for Jeeps. I actually kind of stumbled into it. I was a couple hours away from home visiting some friends, and I saw a Jeep Wrangler for sale on the side of the road. And decided to call on it, ended up getting it for a really good price, brought it home, was playing around with it, and shortly after buying it, my roommates and I were watching Jurassic Park again, and they looked at me and they're like, James, this is like the exact same, you know, type of Jeep you have. It's got the same rims. It looks like it's the same year. You should totally paint your Jeep like the Jurassic Park Jeep. And it started off as a joke. And then from there, I actually went ahead and did it, did a rattle can job the first time around, cause I didn't want to invest much, and loved it. Got a really great reaction, from friends and from strangers on the road, ended up before Jurassic World coming out, having it repainted, with actual automotive paint and doing a proper, paint up of it, and have just been enjoying it ever since.
So James, so you're telling me that you originally purchased the Jeep without the intention of actually building a Jurassic Park Jeep?
Yeah, I did. I it had been a long time since I'd seen the movie and was watching it. Yeah, and just was like, wow, that's very similar to my Jeep, and it wouldn't be that terribly difficult, especially a rattle can job to paint it. And I guess this was back, I don't know, about 8 or 9 years ago. Just started joking around about it, and then eventually pulled the trigger and have just loved having the Jeep ever since.
So you purchased the Jeep about 8 or 9 years ago?
That's right, yeah.
And when did you start, like when did you do the first rattle can job for it? How many years after or how long after you
purchased it? Yeah, I mean, it was pretty quickly. I think it was about a year or two after I purchased it.
Okay.
And then right before the movie came out, so I guess that was 4 years ago or so. I did the 4 or 5 years ago, did the real paint job.
So you've had a Jurassic Park Jeep for quite some time now.
We've had it for a little while now.
You're going to have to send me pictures, because honestly, this is breaking news to me. I had no idea that you had built one before. Did it have like the decals and stuff like that? Or how did it look? You know, 8, 9 years ago, there's very little information on these builds. So
yes.
I'm really curious to see how it actually looked like.
Yeah, you know, it's so much easier to do it nowadays. You know, I didn't know about the Motor Pool when I did it. And I think it was just a couple months before I repainted mine properly that the Motor Pool actually started. And so nowadays, just the resources that are available to know the right paint color and the right, you know, parts and this and that, it's so much easier than it was back then, for sure.
Yeah, when I started building mine back in 2014, and even then, information was very limited. So I would spend hours and hours on the Jurassic Park Jeep forum,
yeah,
finding information, because so much information on there was kind of old and outdated. And
yeah, and a lot of it's changed since then, right? It's not
so, it so much correct. Has changed. Yeah. Yeah, so
yeah,
and then now with the, you know, the JPMotorPool.com. All the information that you need, there's like a huge checklist and it's all there.
Yeah.
And of course I did my part and give them the information that I had, just because I mean, it takes a long time to just read and research and try to find what part is what and where to get this and where to get that or color codes. And, you know, there's just so many different things that are required to build a proper Jurassic Park Jeep. So now with the motor pool, you just go on there and everything's just right there. So anybody that's building a Jurassic Park Jeep, please, for the love of God, go to the Jurassic Park motor pool website, go to the reference section. The information is all there. The information. So if there's ever...
You don't know how good you have it now.
Exactly. So anything that you don't find on there, then, you know, feel free to ask the question, because there's so many questions that are just there. It's most of it is truly there for everyone to just use.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, okay. So you built JP18. Why did you build JP18? Why that number?
Well, you know, I didn't know about the community. You know, now the running joke is, oh gosh, another JP18. and I did mine back, I think I was looking it up. It was 2011 when I did the first rattle can job, and there weren't that many back then. And so, you know, it is a little bit, you know, everybody kind of hates it when another 18 comes along nowadays, but I'm like, hey, I had mine in 2011. And back then it was just the obvious choice. You know, that was the one that they first pulled up in, kind of the hero one. You know, you see a lot of the toys nowadays are 18. I think if I was doing one now, I'd probably pick a different number, just to try to be a little more original. But I didn't know that there was this, you know, awesome community of these guys and gals doing this across the world.
Yeah, in back in 2011, I really didn't know anybody. I didn't know these cars really existed. I didn't know it was a thing until the Jurassic Park Motor Pool, you know, was created in 2012, and I didn't join until I think like 2014, I believe. And then that's when I realized, wow, there's so many people. And then after Jurassic World came out, it just exploded. The community exploded with so many new members.
Yeah.
And then it just continues to grow. I mean, we get plenty, like tons of requests on memberships and memberships for the workshop that are that people have vehicles in process builds. And we get so many of them, and it's just continued to grow throughout the whole world. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and it's such a great community. You know, I'm fortunate enough I get to travel a little bit for work, and it's fun. You know, no matter what city I'm in, I can always, you know, connect with a member of the motor pool. And, you know, a lot of times it's somebody I met at one of the meetups, or even not, you know, just reaching out and saying, hey, what members are in Orlando, or, you know, wherever, and going and grabbing dinner or lunch with the guys and the gals in the group. It's a really great community to be a part of.
Absolutely. And actually you, okay. James is from, city and state are you from again?
I'm in Northwest Arkansas.
That's right. Okay. So James is from Arkansas, and he was actually in town. What was it, last week? You drove through Houston. Yeah. And he was driving through Houston. I'm like, hey, let's meet up. Let's get some lunch or something. So we met up, you know, we got lunch, you know, talked a little bit about things, and you know, that was really cool. And you know, I completely agree on how cool it is and how exciting it is to know so many people in so many different states. Because like me, like you, I travel as well, I make my rounds to different cities and states. And every time I'm out of town, anywhere, I always make it a point to say, hey, you know, see who is in this city, who wants to meet up and hang out and you know, just have a good time. And it's so funny, because I've gone to Vegas and hung out with those guys over there. California, same thing. I hung out with those guys there. Orlando, they got a lot of members, and I'm always going to Orlando. And I mean, there's just so many different places, and there's going to be more trips where I get to meet more and more people in person. So that's pretty exciting how you get to meet so many people in different states wherever you go.
Yeah, it's fun. I think that the meetup that we did last year in Branson, that really helped to kind of solidify the community. And I know everybody's eager to do another one of those again, you know, maybe next year, because it's just fun to get together, you know, and honestly, it's just the strangest assortment of people. And we come together, and this brings us all together, and we just have a blast. And it doesn't matter, you know, who you are or where you come from, you know, you're welcome. And we have a lot of fun together.
Absolutely. And that's right. You did meet up with us over at the Jurassic Park Motor Pool National Meetup in Branson, Missouri. How long of a drive was that for you? Because I don't think you're too far away, right?
No, yeah, we lucked out. Yeah, Joe and I, who's from Northwest Arkansas as well, you know, it's like an hour and a half drive for us. So when goodness, it was announced God. That it was going to be in Branson, we were like, oh, this is perfect.
We won. Yeah, it was, we were 13 and a half hours, but yeah, truly in a Jeep, it's probably like close to 15, 16 hours. Yeah, it was,
that's a long
it was
ride in a Jeep.
It was a long ride in a Jeep. And you know, there's people from California that's like, what, 26 or 27 hours or something. There's people from New Jersey and Pennsylvania and so many
Virginia,
different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then there was some lucky members that, that got to, that got it good to where they were living nearby where it was like you, you know, fortunately for you, it was only you know, hour or so away. So that was, that must've been, you know, pretty
yeah,
cool
I lucked out for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So you've been on pretty big production movie sets. You've been extra from Stranger Things to obviously one of the best movies of our time for the dinosaur people, Jurassic World. You got to tell us a little bit about that. What got you into being an extra?
You know, it all started with Jurassic World. It was back when they had announced that they were going to be making it. You know, the interesting thing is to, you know, to do the extra thing in movies, you have to know about the movies before most people do, because usually by the time they start showing trailers or promoting the movie, it's already been filmed and stuff gets filmed, you know, sometimes a year or more before it releases. So because I was in the Jurassic Park community and following these different pages, I started to see that it was being filmed before, you know, anybody really kind of in the at least mainstream public outside of the Jurassic Park circles realized. And just kind of had this thought, you know, I was like, I don't know how this works, but I will do whatever it takes to be a fly on the wall and to get on the set. And so I started doing some research, following some of these awesome blogs in the community. And I realized that they had shot all of the exteriors in Hawaii, and they were now moving to do all of the interior shots in New Orleans. And did some digging around, found out that a casting company called Central Casting was casting the background actors and extras for the for Jurassic World. And did some digging, found out they were doing an open casting call where you could go down there. Casting call is kind of not the right term for it. Basically, you go down there, you fill out your paperwork, prove that you can work legally. They take your picture, you know, they take your measurements, and they put you in their database. And then what they do is, as the need for extras come up, they, you know, work through those pictures, find, you know, the right people that fit the look that they're going for, and reach out to them and see if they're available. My wife and I, we jumped in the car, we drove down to New Orleans and did the casting call, and then just waited from there. Shortly after doing that, two coworkers of mine, that they did the same thing. They actually got booked in the downtown scenes. And so they took off and spent about a week down in New Orleans filming everything that was down kind of in the downtown of the park. And that came and went, and was watching the blogs, realized they were in the last few weeks of filming, didn't know, you know, if I was going to get a call or not. And sure enough, got an email and a call asking if I'd be willing to do a scene that was in about 9 days in New Orleans. And so, of course, immediately I was like, yes, yes, 1,000 times yes, and made plans and drove down there. It's crazy because they don't give you any information in advance. They, you know, everything they did, they didn't call it Jurassic World. It was being called by its production title, which was Ebbtide. And it's all very secretive. So I had no idea what I signed up for, what, you know, what scene it would be, what the set would be, anything. And went down there, and, the day before, I had to get down a day before shooting, and go in and do a costume fitting. And so that was really when it was going to be like, okay, let's, what's the costume going to be? Where, you know, what's the part going to be? Am I going to be, you know, who knows? You know, you just don't have any details at that point in time. And, so went in, they actually filmed it, in New Orleans. They've got the giant hangars where they used to build the shuttles for NASA. And since the shuttle program has been retired, they have no longer have a use for that particular facility. And so they've actually, at the time anyways, they had rented it out to Big Easy Studios, and they were subleasing it to production companies like Universal to film it. So I had to go out on the day before, get a NASA badge to get onto the property, which in and of itself was cool enough. And then the next day went back and did a costume fitting. And at that point in time, they told me that I was going to be an engine contractor. And so, you know, of course the wheels in my head are turning, like, what is this going to be? What scene is this going to be in? Am I going to get eaten by a dinosaur? You just don't know. You're given no details.
Yeah. Because if you don't get eaten by a dinosaur, then that leaves you open to sequels, right? Catch if you cast it as sequel. Yeah, yeah. This guy can continue to be in the movie because technically you didn't get killed off.
You didn't die. Yeah. Although I think the getting killed by a dinosaur might make it worthwhile to never be cast again. But yeah, I had no idea. I was like, I didn't know what, you know, there was no details at that point in time. And so even the next day, you know, we had to be, I think our call time was 6:30 or 7:30 in the morning, which we didn't get until 9 o'clock the night before. Cause they don't know they don't know what time they're going to start filming the next day until they know what time they wrap filming the night before. So get on there.
So you got to kind of be ready for anything, huh?
Yeah, you do. You're just waiting and they give you a number to call. So you're calling it and it's like, you know, we don't have your call time yet. And you call it again. Oh, we don't have your call time yet. And you're just waiting, waiting for it to tell you, you know, when the call time is going to be. And then you're told to call again in the morning to make sure that your call time hasn't changed in the morning. So the whole thing is nerve wracking. But went back on set, got the costume on, went through hair, went through makeup, went through the props department. And then we're just hanging out waiting. Like, we haven't seen a set yet. We haven't seen an actor yet. Nothing. We're just in these kind of back offices, and then the assistant director walks in, and he walks us through a little bit of set etiquette. You know, what's going to happen, and then he says, "Okay, you guys, this scene we're filming is in the park control room." So, you know, then I'm like, "Oh my gosh, the park control room!
How cool!"
So I have no idea what big the set's going to look like, who's going to be there, what, you know, nothing. They've given us no information. And the funny thing is, you know, a lot of the guys that were in the room, they just do this background thing consistently. It's like what they do for side money, or some of them for their main gig. And so a lot of them, they didn't know, you know, until they got on set what the movie was, didn't really care or weren't excited about it. And they were all of them were from the Louisiana area. So here I am. I had driven like 14 hours or however long, you know, with breaks to get there. And they're just like, oh yeah, blah, 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 chatting about it. And I'm like, you guys, like, this is Jurassic. This is the next Jurassic Park movie. Like, it was crazy to be in the room, and they didn't care.
It was one of the biggest movie of its time when it was released. It was a huge deal.
Like, crazy. Yeah. Yeah. It was one of the highest grossing films. Yeah. It's only, you know, since been surpassed by a lot of these superhero movies that have come out. But yeah, so I'm, you know, I felt like I was the big nerd in the room because all these other guys, they, you know, I guess they had done it a lot and they didn't really know what it was and they hadn't, like, you know, specifically sought it out. And they were all huge too.
Yeah, I remember when you got casted, you mentioned something. I don't remember if it must have been before the movie was released. When did you mention something about being an extra in the movie?
I think I left a few hints and told some people close to me. It's one of those things. Every time I've done one of these since then, it's shrouded in a lot of secrecy. You know, of course, they have you sign, you know, non-disclosure agreements and all these scary forms. So basically, you know, I think that's one of the exciting things about doing it is you go in, you do this, you know these things, you see these things, and you can't say anything. But then, you know, a year later or however many months later, it comes out and now, you know, there are no more secrets basically.
Yeah.
But it's just fun to kind of know, and you really, you know, as a background extra, you only get like little bits and pieces. So you're trying to piece together this bigger thing. You were only on set for a day or two of a, you know, however many months shoot. And you're just trying to, you know, to piece the puzzle pieces together. So when the movie comes out, you're like, oh, that's why, or, oh, that makes sense, or that, you know, But you're just given such together. Such a small piece of it. So we walk in, we're in the control room, and I'm nerding out, you know, because all the guys that recreate Jeeps and do all these movie props, you know, you want these details that have just gotten lost to time. And so here I am, I'm like on this set, I'm trying to enjoy the moment, but I'm also trying, I'm like, I felt like this historian obligation to remember as many details as I could about different things and what was going on. And they walk us in and they walk us along to the front of the giant screen. And we stand there in a row, and the director comes out, he walks down and he starts looking at each of us and he's picking people. He says, okay, him. All right. Him.
Was this Colin Trevorrow?
It was. Yeah. He walks in and the assistant director is like, now this is our director, Colin Trevorrow. I'm like, yeah, I know. I didn't say this, but inside I'm like, yeah, I know who he is. It's like, oh my gosh, he's in here. So he came in, he was very much, super organized, super on top of it. You could just see the creative wheels turning in his head.
Wow.
And he starts picking people. And I'm like, I have no idea what he's picking people for. He could be picking people to leave. I don't know. So it's like, I'm sitting there like, I think I want him to pick me. I don't know. And he comes to me, he looks at me and he says, him. And I was like, okay, all right, I'm in. I don't know what I'm in for. And then what he was doing, it turns out he was picking who was going to be in the elevator, with Vincent D'Onofrio, when the elevator's open and we come in to kind of take over the control room. So really lucked out.
Let's roll back and kind of paint a picture for everybody that's listening. So pretty much the scene that you did was the control room where, Claire was, where Laurie was, and then also, what's his name? Mizrani was there towards the end. And
mm-hmm. Yep.
So your scene specifically was the moment where Mizrani was just killed in a helicopter crash. And so Vic yep. Hoskins, is the engine is taking over and he comes right. in, elevator opens up. He comes in, flashes his badge or whatever. And then he's pretty much telling everybody in the control room that it's an engine's operations now, that they no longer have control.
Exactly.
And then there comes, you know, James Smith right there in the elevators. You can see him smack dab, like with the central left corner of the screen with all these other like massive, like ex-military dudes. And then you see James right there, just, you know, looking as tough as he possibly
can. Let's talk about that for a second. I don't know how I got cast for this. Like I think my picture got mixed up with somebody else's because like you said, there's these guys in there and they're like, when we were sitting in the holding room before we got brought in, they're talking about where they served and all this stuff. And these guys are huge. Like their necks are massive. And I'm just kind of sitting over here like, I like Jurassic Park. And like, I don't know how I got picked for this, but I ain't saying anything.
So you got to explain about the whole beard. Like, I think you had talked about something where, you were debating to either shave or grow a beard to try to land a role in this movie. Is that right?
Yeah. So I had, at the time I had, you know, a beard, and, they didn't really give us clear instructions as to what to do coming to set. And so I was talking with my friends, I was like, do I shave the beard? Do I not shave the beard? Like, is it, you know, and ultimately we decided that a lot of these military guys that I got cast with were probably going to be clean shaven. And so if I had a beard, that might set me apart. And I don't know if that's the reason why he picked me to be in the elevator or not. I like to think it is, but there was this one moment. So we're in this elevator, which we were in for hours, and it doesn't even actually function. The doors just open. It doesn't go up or down.
Do the doors open automatically?
I don't know. I didn't actually see the mechanics of it. I think that there was somebody back there opening the doors. Whether that was like pushing a button or not, I don't know.
Yeah, I've seen how when I went to what was it? Where did we go? I think it was Sony. I believe it was Sony or Warner Brothers. I want to say it was Sony. We went and we saw a set of a show. I don't remember the show, but it was like a police station or something. And they had an elevator right there. And as soon as I saw the elevator, all I thought about was you and your scene standing in that elevator. And I was just looking at the elevator, the mechanics of it, and yeah, it doesn't obviously it doesn't go anywhere. It's just the doors, and you see like the little the floor has like these grips on it to make it look like a normal elevator. But in the very back of the elevator, it was like completely open. There was no walls in the back of the elevator.
Yeah, like when you walk around the backside of set, it was just studs, nothing finished out. I never got to see it. You know, the way it opened and closed really smoothly made me think that it was a little bit more of a automatic or
and that actually
opening, but it could have been guys pulling on ropes. I don't know.
And actually, Chris Pratt stood in that elevator at one point, right?
Oh yeah, he comes in and out of it when he goes in, to the control room. And that scene was in the trailer, which was really exciting because you're waiting to see if you make the cut or if your scene even makes the movie. And you see the elevator doors open and Chris is standing there. And my wife was there. I was like, that's the elevator. That's the elevator.
Yeah. And it's so interesting because out of all like the extras that you could have been, you got a pretty solid role. First of all, you were an engines, contractor, which that's pretty awesome. You know, you're an engine guy. You're not just like a park goer or just some random person running in the background or whatever. You were an engine guy. Like you were on the team. You worked for engine.
Yeah, I don't think I realized how much. I mean, I felt very fortunate to be there, but I don't think I realized how fortunate it was because I've done since doing that. I had a blast there, but I also realized that I loved doing this background work. It's just fun. It makes fun memories. And I've been on several sets where I'd be there all day, get costumed up, everything, and then either the scene gets cut or I don't make any of the shots or whatever. So yeah, to have landed that as the very first thing as a background person was just incredibly fortunate.
Oh yeah, I can only imagine. I remember as soon as you got casted or whatever, when you mentioned something about possibly being in Jurassic World, I was like, man, I'm so glad one of the people that I know gets to have this opportunity. Cause I wanted to do that. I remember when they were having the little casting call or whatever for extras, they were looking for extras over in New Orleans, and New Orleans isn't too far from where I live in Houston, Texas.
Right.
But at the time I was in another state for an extended period of time. So it just wasn't going to work. And I just remember just thinking to myself, I want to be a part of this movie so bad. It was such a huge, Jurassic World is a huge deal because it's the first time we get a Jurassic movie since 2001. Yeah. And the 2001 movie, which is Jurassic Park 3, was pretty terrible. So I like to pretend like we haven't had a movie since 97.
I mean, really, really.
So, but yeah, I'm so glad that you were able to experience that. And then we can relive those memories through what you have to say about it. And you can paint us this picture on what it's like to be in Jurassic World. So whenever you were there, did you get to see any of the other main actors or just Vincent, what's his name? D'Onofrio.
Vincent D'Onofrio was in the elevator. So obviously, he was there with us all day. Jake Johnson, the control room operator, he was there all day. Lauren Lapkus, the other control room operator, she was there all day. I did get to see Masrani. I saw him in the lunch line.
How
actually,
cool.
I was getting food, and I look over and I see him, and he's just he's just so memorable.
Yeah.
And just clearly, you see him, and you're like, clearly this guy's famous. And I was like, how do I know this guy? How do I know this guy?
Yeah, he's a big deal.
He's awesome.
I like
he's
him.
Such a fantastic actor.
Yes, he's a magnificent actor, and that's the thing. It really bothers me that they killed him off, especially the way how they did.
Yeah.
I feel like that was not necessary. And it's not like he was like a bad guy in the movie or something. Like he cared about the animals. Yeah. He cared about the park. And, he John Hammond personally passed on the torch to Masrani.
Yeah.
And then we lost him like that. I don't understand. I don't think that was fair.
Yeah, so he wasn't on set, but he was there. And then we were in between takes. At one point, Claire came in, and she wasn't filming that day either, but I guess she was just on set. And she had her son with her, her real-life son, and he was around the same age as Trevorrow's son. So they were running around the control room playing briefly during a break. So it was great to see her, because obviously she's a phenomenal actress.
So you got to see Bryce Dallas Howard.
Yeah. Which, you know, just seeing her, but also just her family legacy in Hollywood.
Yeah.
It was really neat. Obviously everybody, I think, wanted to see Chris Pratt, you know, cause he's the main guy, but he wasn't there that day. But we did the scenes, obviously the scene where the elevator opens and Hoskin comes in and takes over the control room. But then we filmed from that all the way through to when they abandon the control room, when Jake Johnson's character tries to see if there's any romantic interest from Lauren Lapkus, and he gets rejected and then goes to the elevator. So I'm in the control room during all of that. So it's fun to see these kind of bits and pieces.
How cool.
And they actually filmed that scene with the two of them. They actually filmed that two different ways. They did two different versions, and I didn't know what was going to end up, you know, obviously in the final film until seeing it. So that was kind of fun too, to see them kind of shoot these, I guess, I don't know if it's an alternative ending or whatnot, but, they didn't know which direction they were going to go, whether he was going to get rejected or not.
So the control room, was it as big as it looks on film, or would you say it's a little bit smaller?
Yeah, it was. You know, there's been several sets that I've been on that seem larger on camera. But that was a very large set. I mean, the screens, they worked. It wasn't like they had green screens or whatever. They had that giant screen up there that was projecting people in the park and tracking the dinosaurs and all that crazy stuff. And then in front of each control room operator, they had two tablets that were like on the surface. And they were Samsung tablets that had an app that they had created just for that. And it had some interactivity to it. As you played with the tablet, things would change and move. So that was really cool to see that much detail went into it. And then, of course, the giant monitors in front of each person. It was really cool to see all the different things. Like, they had the glass into the back room. It could be tilted whichever way they needed to. So if they were lighting the scene a certain way, they could tilt the glass differently to get the glare off of it.
Okay.
But they did, I mean, they did a fantastic job. It was a very large set. And I would say that if anything, it was larger in real life than it looked on screen.
Is there anything else about the set you want to talk about?
You know, I just think it was really cool. Just like, even just when I went in for the costume fitting, you know, they give you your costume, you go into this room, and there's just, it's just wall to wall lined with Jurassic World costumes. And that was pretty cool, because there really hadn't, you know, nothing about the movie had been released then. So just being in this room and seeing, you know, all these different costumes that were, you know, being used in the production was just kind of a really cool moment, especially for somebody that appreciates like everything that happens in the cosplay community. And knowing like, oh, these are the costumes that are going to get, you know, people are going to be trying to figure out what shirt it was and what color fabric and how it was sewn. And so being there and seeing all that was really neat. And then seeing, God created dinosaurs book, in the control room. That was kind of a fun Easter egg
spot
throughout the day.
Yeah,
that was there, and seeing one of the other extras pointed it out to me, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's awesome.
Now, the God Creates Dinosaurs is, for those that don't know, is Dr. Malcolm's book that he made, that he wrote for his character or whatever in there. So and there's I believe there's two scenes where you can see Dr. Malcolm's book. One is on the monorail. The right. What is it, the nanny or babysitter, whatever you want to call the assistant, Claire's assistant,
yeah.
Zara, she was reading the book, and then you can also see it on, what is it, Laurie's desk, I think, or they had the book as well in the control room.
Yeah.
So while if I were you and if I was there, I know I'd probably be geeking out the entire time. Was there any moment when you're sitting there like, man, I can't believe I'm here. I feel like I don't even belong here. Like, I'm sure you were geeking out the entire time being in a movie the franchise means so much to you and so many people. Was there ever a moment where you're like, man, this is surreal. I can't believe this.
You know, to be honest, like the entire 12 hours that I was on set was like that. It was just trying to take it all in and just knowing, you know, this is just, you know, once in a lifetime opportunity. Just in seeing all the different props in the prop room and the different costumes and the costume rooms and having the, some of the actors there. I mean, everything about it was just completely surreal, and just knowing like, man, this is just a movie and a franchise that means so much to such a strong fan base. I was just trying to take it all in, because I knew it was only gonna last for so long. And actually they booked us for 2 days, and we ended up filming everything we needed to film in 1 day. So we didn't get to do the second day that we thought we had coming, which made me even more glad that I, that first day just kind of took it all in and just enjoyed being there and seeing how this process worked, and the director and the, you know, all the different crew members, you know, the how professional they were and how great of a job they did. And you know, every aspect of it was just so cool.
Yeah. Well, you definitely chose the right movie to be an extra in. That's for sure.
Because I mean, how often does a movie like that, you know, come around, really? You know, you've got a lot of fun movies that come out, but something that's just this classic revisit that does that well. You know, it's not very often that a movie of that caliber comes out.
Oh, absolutely. And speaking of, you got to talk about your time with Stranger Things. So, you know, right now Stranger Things is very popular. I personally, unfortunately, have not seen much of it. My fiance has seen, she's a big fan. She's seen all of it. So you got to talk to us about what role you played in Stranger Things.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so after doing this, with Jurassic World, you know, the main thought was I got to do that again. Like that was just too much fun. To, you know, to be there and just play a really small part and see how everything comes together and to be on the sets and to get a little bit of insight. And then I think the most fun part of it is you do it and then you've got several months to a year before it comes out. And so there's this, you know, excitement of, will I make it? Will the scene make it? Will I be cut out? You know, will I end up in a shot? So since then I've done, I think about 10 different movies or TV shows. And one of them, I was a big fan of the first season of Stranger Things when it came out. So I thought to myself, I wonder where this is filmed. And I looked it up and it's actually filmed really close to where my dad lives in the Atlanta area. So I thought, okay, I got to figure out who's cast in background for this and see if I can land a role in this, because I could drive to Atlanta, stay in my dad's house and do something on the set. So I started watching the casting calls, and actually really quickly after I discovered who was cast in the background, this casting call came out for a background person. And kind of the general rule is the more specific the background casting call is, the better chance you're going to end up on camera. If they're looking for, you know, mall patrons or pool patrons or something like that, you're probably just going to be in a sea of people. Which can be fun too. But this one, they were looking for somebody that was a particular height, a particular weight, particular build. And it just so happened to fit what I was. So I emailed in, sent pictures, all that good stuff. And very quickly after that, got a call from the casting director. I'd never worked with them before. And it can be harder to get booked that first time with a casting agency. And once you've worked with them and showed them that you're dependable and you're on time and you're going to be there, it's easier to get the next background gig with them. So I hadn't worked with her before. So she called me and she said, you know, are you dependable? Are you going to let me down? I was like, no, I'm dependable. I'm there, you know. And she's like, okay, great. We need you here on Friday for a costume fitting. And we're filming, I think it was like the next Monday or something like that. And again, no details. Nothing was given to me. So I was like, okay, great. So I think the next day hopped in the car, drove to Atlanta, went to go do the costume fitting where I was hoping I'd figure out, you know, what this costume is that required me to be a specific size, and get to the gates of the studio. And they call the casting director. She's like, oh, the costume didn't come in. We're going to have to just do the fitting on the day of the shoot. So here I was like, can you tell me anything? She's like, no, I can't tell you anything. It's really cool. We'll just show up on the first day of shooting. So I was like, okay. So show up the first day of shooting. They give me the address. I drive there, and it's actually the building that they use for Hawkins National Laboratory. So just seeing that building and how, you know, much of a signature look it has was cool enough in itself. But I get there, go down to check in, get ready for costuming, and they bring it out, and it's the flamethrower suit and the flamethrower wand, flamethrower backpack. And I guess what happened is they had a principal actor playing it in the first episode of the second season, and they were unable to get him back for the fifth and the sixth episodes where they needed the flamethrower again. So that's ultimately why I ended up getting the part, was because I was the same size as this guy who had been in the suit before that the suit was made for. So I got in the suit, ended up doing the scenes with Joyce and Hopper and Bob in the tunnels, where Hopper is tied up, and Joyce and Bob come in, they cut him free, and they turn around, and the flamethrower is standing there, and helps, you know, flamethrow the vine, and then Will's up on the ground up above shaking, because we don't know that flamethrower or the vines getting burned by the flamethrower has that effect on him. But again, just another real surreal experience to be there with, you know, David Harbour, Winona Ryder, and Sean Astin, and to work with them on set for a day. You know, I just felt like I had won the lottery on that. And, you know, it was kind of the same thing. I was like, didn't think I could top being in Jurassic World. And then, you know, I was like, there's no way you get to top being the flamethrower in the Upside Down on Stranger Things.
And that flamethrower has gotten a lot of attention on their promotional pictures, and
yeah.
I've seen you so many times in so many different things, and I'm just like, there's James, and that's James. I know that guy.
Yeah, and I was also in Target, and they had him on a shirt on Target, and I was like, oh my gosh. Oh,
that's right. I remember seeing that picture. You took a picture with that shirt. It's like, look, it's me. That's me on a t-shirt. And also, I know the Treehouse of Horror for The Simpsons. What is that for? It's for this year, is that right? The Treehouse of Horror. And what is it? Homer is playing you, so you're being played by a Homer Simpson. In,
you know, it's awesome when you get Simpsonfied, right? Yeah, that was crazy to see that too. And it was fun. It was a blast to do, and you know, it was fun. Like, I'm watching season three. They had the recap of season two, and the flamethrower was in that. So I don't know how I lucked that out. It was an amazing, amazing day on set. But I guess just right size, right time. I don't know.
And you've been extra twice now on Stranger Things?
Yeah. So after doing that, you know, when they started filming season three, you know, I was like, I got to try to do this again. And so I watched and tried to find what they call like a featured background role, where you're in a smaller group and you're not just a sea of faces, ultimately couldn't find one. I knew they were in the last week or two of filming, and the opportunity presented itself to be a festival goer at Mayor Klein's festival that he throws on the 4th of July. And so that was a really great experience. It was, I think they had almost 500 extras where they recreated this carnival. And everybody is dressed in July 4th shorts and tank tops and flip-flops. But we filmed all those scenes the end of October, beginning of November, overnight. So we'd start shooting as soon as the sun went down, and we'd wrap as soon as the sun came up. And in the middle of the night, it was getting down to, you know, the teens temperature-wise. So we literally would all have our coats on. They would yell for us that we were going to start rolling or rehearsing. And a lot of the trash cans around the carnival, we actually all just threw our jackets into those. They had clean bags in them, and they were there to hold the jackets. And we would, you know, film for 20, 30 minutes. And then when they'd tell us we were good, they'd yell jackets on, and we'd run and grab our jackets and go and stand by space heaters, and did that three nights in a row. I think it took them four nights to film all of those scenes at the carnival. But another just fun experience, and that was a lot different because almost everybody that was there, they were all huge fans of the show. And so you just have a group of people that are just so excited to be there, that love the show, and that made for a really fun atmosphere.
So you also were in a movie with Tom Cruise. You want to tell us a little bit about that one too?
Yeah, that was the very next thing I did after Jurassic World. He was filming Jack Reacher 2. In New Orleans, and they rented a part of the New Orleans airport. Actually, was able to take two of my friends down with me, And we spent two overnight shoots at the airport shooting there.
Oh, really? So they actually filmed at the airport?
In the airport. Yeah, it was.
I've always wondered about that.
Yeah. Yeah. They rented a wing of it.
Yeah. There's always, I see all these movies with airports and airplanes in them. And mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, things are so incredibly strict here with security. I always thought it was just like a sound stage where they just recreate like the interior parts of an airport or something like that. So that's crazy how they actually filmed
it
at the airport.
I think it depends on the production. Yeah, sometimes I think they do build it. For this one, at night, from 10 p.m. until 3 a.m., the airports are pretty slow. And so they were able to rent out this section of the airport for that. So I think it just depends on the production. But yeah, it was cool to be at an actual airport. So it made security a little interesting because they had to keep us segregated from the people that had actually gone through security. But it was fun. I got to do one shot where I was coming off the plane right before Tom. And so was on the on this plane. They really literally rented a plane for shooting. And so it was me, three other background people, and Tom Cruise on this plane, waiting to film them exiting the plane and then running off onto the tarmac. So it was neat to be, in such close proximity to obviously one of the biggest, A-list actors.
For sure.
And, I was just really impressed by his, professionalism. He was extremely kind to all of the extras that were there that day. And also extremely focused, and just, very driven. I don't think it's luck, why he's been so successful. He just works really, really hard.
Yeah. I have heard that, he's a very, very passionate actor and, he tries to do as many stunts as he can. As you can see, obviously he got mm-hmm. hurt pretty badly in one of his, last movies from a year or two ago. Doing his own stunts, like jumping rooftops and, I think something happened with the cable or something and he broke his ankle or something crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. I do have a lot of respect for Tom Cruise. I've always enjoyed his movies, and Mission Impossible is always fun. It was one of my favorite movies from him.
Yeah. I mean, I had very limited interaction with him, but just from seeing him on set, those two nights and being in close proximity with him, just a lot of respect. He works really hard and was very kind to everybody.
How cool. And that's something that I've always wanted to do, is I always wanted to be on set just to watch movie magic come together. And I want to see how all these moving parts get put into place. And I mean, not necessarily be an extra. I mean, yeah, I'd love to be an extra. I'd love to be an engine, contractor as well on Jurassic World. But it's something that I definitely want to be able to do one day, but being in Houston, it's nothing's really going to happen here. Although some movies have been, very few have been filmed here, like RoboCop 2 was filmed in Houston, and they actually still have the soundstage that it was filmed in. It's a tiny soundstage, but it still exists west of downtown Houston. It's called Houston Studios, and I don't know what they use it for anymore, but they used to use it for little commercials and shoots like that. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty cool knowing that, we have a little bit of movie history in, somewhere random like Houston for that.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, the latest season three of True Detective was filmed right here in our town in Arkansas.
Oh, cool.
So you just never know. It's getting easier to film remotely. Different states are passing laws that give great tax incentives, to the production companies. I don't think anybody would have predicted, 15 or 20 years ago that Atlanta would be such a hot spot for filming that it is today. There's so much stuff being filmed.
Oh,
there.
Absolutely. Yeah, and all these little cities are starting to get known, just like Albuquerque, New Mexico, with Albuquerque Studios, where Breaking Bad was filmed for so many years, hopefully they keep filming more in New Orleans, because New Orleans is about 6 hours from me. So if anybody needs an extra, hey, I'm available. I'll exactly. Come on down to New Orleans. So you didn't get to see the main street set of Jurassic World. Is that right?
I didn't know. I had, two coworkers, that did that set. So I got a lot of fun stories, from them. They brought me back one of the wristbands, that all the extras were given, and a piece of amber from below the statue there in front of the Innovation Center.
Oh, cool. That broke?
Yeah. So I got to, you know, I got to hear a lot of fun stories from them, and it sounds like that was just an incredible set.
Oh yeah, I love seeing the behind the scenes of that set, Main Street. It's so interesting because that set was filmed at the abandoned Six Flags Jazzland in New Orleans. It was a theme park, and you know they used the parking lot pretty often for movies because it's so big, and that's where they built Jurassic World. And you know, I may or may not have recently gone over there and flown my drone in the area, may or may not, you know, I'm not sure, I don't remember, but you can still see you can see it in Google Earth. And you can see in the parking lot there's still the concrete that they poured for the Main Street of Jurassic World, and you can still see the indentation where they had the fountains in front of the Innovation Center. It's amazing, and it's so cool how Jurassic World was filmed right there, you know, and we have like beautiful place like Hawaii where they filmed these, you know, beautiful exterior shots, and then you have random place like New Orleans they filmed the park. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, that was an amazing set, and my understanding was they spent millions of dollars on that Main Street set, and I think it was money well spent.
Oh yeah, that set was. I remember first seeing it on like trailers or like little sneak previews online, and just seeing a working Jurassic Park. You know, there's like, oh, there's the Starbucks, there's Margaritaville,
exactly.
There's Dave and Buster's. There's an IMAX movie. It's just really brought it to life, and it looked so beautiful, and it's so heartbreaking seeing that set that they reconstructed that set for Fallen Kingdom. And they made it look abandoned and kind of, you know, just falling apart and crumbling. And it's like, well, there's the park that we always wanted to see. And there it is.
Yeah. It lasted such a short time. Yeah.
Yeah. It was very short lived. But that comes to another thing is I know there's one movie left, and I don't want it to end. I really truly feel like there's so much more that can be done with the franchise. There can be prequels. I would love to see how Jurassic Park was cleaned up and then redone for Jurassic World. You know, I would love to see the origins of the relationship between John Hammond and what's the other guy's name? Lockwood. Yeah. So John Hammond and Lockwood, I would love to see how they started off in their, you know, younger years. I mean, there's just so much more that can be done with this franchise, just like Star Wars. Star Wars gets movies all the time. Yeah. And I would like to continue seeing Jurassic Park films. I know a lot of people are like, oh, I should have ended at the first one or the second one, or whatever. But it's like, no, keep it coming. This is good. Yeah. This is good. I want more. I want more collectibles. I want more merchandise. I want more Jurassic Park, you know, and I would love to somehow come out with a Jurassic World where we get a little more time in the park, whether it being setting up the park or just enjoying it. But you know, I don't have another story for it. I don't know, because I feel like in Jurassic Park or Jurassic World there always has to be this magnificent thing and then catastrophe with dinosaurs escaping and all this craziness happening. So I don't know how these movies would just be of the park of just experiencing the park with, I don't know what other things can happen.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they end this third movie for sure.
Yeah, I'm a little worried. Fallen Kingdom really hurt seeing Isla Nublar being engulfed with the, you know, volcano and lava and stuff. I'm still a little bitter about that. That was very heartbreaking, especially the Brachiosaurus scene where everybody was bawling their eyes out in the theater when that happened.
Yeah,
but So do you have any other movies that you are possibly going to be an extra in, or have your mind set on another movie or a show in the near future?
Yeah, the only one that I've done that hasn't come out yet is Damon Lindelof's Watchmen that's going to be on HBO. I got to be on the set of the pilot for that about a little over a year ago. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't think I made it. I think I got cut from it. And I don't even know. They may have even just sometimes they'll refilm the pilot. They'll do a pilot, get it approved, and then reshoot it, make changes in casting or whatnot. So I'm interested to see that. It was a really interesting set for sure.
That should be pretty interesting. I did like the movie. I like the movie a lot.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting, to see that. But other than that, the Stranger Things 3 that just came out, that was what I was waiting to come out since we shot in October, November of last year. So I'm kind of at that point now where we'll see, I have no idea what's on the horizon for what's being filmed, but certainly watching just some different casting calls to see if there's anything cool that's fun that's out there. The more I do, the more it's got to be a film that I really am interested in, or a really cool, featured part, or something like that. Because the excitement, unless it's another Jurassic World, of being on set, it decreases a little bit each time. So it's a little harder to find something that's like, oh, that's worth driving 12 hours to Atlanta and back to on zero notice to be in. But every time I say that, there's a new film that's getting produced, and I'm like, oh my goodness, that would be so awesome. So who knows what's on the horizon? It's really, you really hear about movies before everybody else does.
Well, I'm looking forward to hopefully seeing you in some more movies or shows in the near future.
Thanks.
So okay, James, what are your top three favorite movie cars of all time?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm pretty basic in that sense. I think it's got to be the Jurassic Park Jeep, the Back to the Future DeLorean.
Excellent choice.
And then, honestly, probably the Toy Story Pizza Planet truck, just because it's been in so many. And I know you just acquired one, so I hate to say that, but it's just cool. It's just a fun truck.
So technically, you like two of my vehicles.
That's yes. Right. Exactly. And I think I kind of mix in the Explorer with the Jeep there, because that's a really cool. I mean, the guys that build that is very respectable build with a lot more challenges. Any movie cars are just like, I got to have dinner two evenings in a row with Elliot there in Orlando, and got to see several of his cars. And
yeah, Elliot, which is I bought my Pizza Planet truck from Elliot, which is
right,
in Orlando.
Right. Yeah. Just a cool guy that has a lot of really in-depth knowledge of different movie cars and movie car scene. It's just a fun community to be a part of. When you have the Jurassic Park Jeep, you're not only a part of the Jurassic Park motor pool, but you're also a part of this larger community of these guys and gals building these star cars. And I think for a lot of us, people ask, well, why have a Jurassic Park Jeep, or why, have a Jurassic Park this or this type of car? And really, there isn't any logical why other than that it makes people happy. And people see
absolutely.
Them driving down the road and they get joy out of it. And, it's just one of those like unexpected things in your day that brings you a smile. And so to play a part of that's awesome.
So let me step forward for a second. So I got a couple of questions from some of my followers on Instagram, and one kind of and I wanted to ask, have you answer this for me? And this one kind of goes in line with what you're just saying about how driving it around, it's rewarding seeing people's reactions and how it makes people happy. So Jake Wilcher asked, so what's your favorite part of driving a Jurassic vehicle?
Yeah, I think it's just that. I think it's just, you pull it out and people – you're driving by and there's a car full of kids and they just point and smile and it makes their day, or even just a car full of 30-year-old guys, they're driving and they see it and they spin around and ask if they can take pictures. It's just fun. There's just too much normalness in everyday life, and when you're driving and you don't expect and then bam, Back to the Future DeLorean pulls up
exactly.
next to you, it brings a smile to your face. It brightens your day. I think people that are really rational, well, why? There is no why. It's just fun. It's just fun to make people smile. They're fun to drive around in.
It sure is. Yeah. And most people, whenever they're driving, you know, they're kind of like an autopilot. They're just, you know, you're driving, you kind of just zone out, you're listening to music, whatever it is. You don't expect to see a movie car driving right next to you, especially one that brings you such nostalgia, like Back to the Future, Jurassic Park, you know, Pizza Planet, Toy Story, and stuff like that. So it just really catches people off guard, and they look and they double take and they just start to smile. I'm like, whoa, you're very happy. Great.
Well, you don't know what was going on their day. You know, they could be having a real bad day, or, you know, just kind of blah, and they see that, and it brings a smile to their face. And then not only that, but they go home and tell people about it. And then when you're in a small community too, you know, Instagram, people are like, oh, you know, oh, I've seen that before. I've seen that car before. And they get excited about it.
Yeah. So here's another question by Jurassic Jeep 22, which is actually Jonathan Raft. He's a fellow Motor Pool member.
Yeah,
he's
great guy.
Asking, who is your – yeah, he's really fun. Actually met him up in Orlando when I last went. He ended up going too as well.
Oh, no kidding. He ended
up
awesome.
Meeting me up there. Yeah, it was like was a Memorial Day weekend, I think, and I announced it. And he's like, oh, I'll go. I have nothing to do. I'll meet you up in Orlando. So that was pretty cool. But – Jonathan Raft is asking, who is your favorite character in the Jurassic Park franchise?
Oh man, that's a hard one.
Yeah. I mean, there's several, so there's a lot of good characters. I like Muldoon a lot.
I think for me, probably Timmy, just because
Timmy,
yeah, they put him in there to like,
he's so passionate.
Well, he brings, you know, I think he's there to like that's what you kind of live vicariously through him, like his excitement, his level of passion about things, you know, is, and you know, being around that age when the movie came out too, it's just cool to think.
Oh,
you know,
yeah, absolutely.
They, you know, they have that
element. I thought Timmy was so cool when I first saw that movie. I'm like, man, that kid is so cool. You know, so much about dinosaurs,
exactly.
And he's over here at this park. This kid is tough. Like, I thought he was like the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's just fun. I think it's a fun, you know, it was a fun role, and you know, to just have that excitement and that eyes wide open child wonderment of being there. You know, and they play with the character a lot too. I think it was just a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, absolutely. All right, so James Smith, I gotta tell everybody, my favorite. I called James Smith Hollywood. That's my favorite thing to call him. It's fitting. It makes sense to me, even though he doesn't live in Hollywood, but he's been in these incredible movies. And every time I see like his pictures that he posts, I've seen you post like selfies of you in characters and different outfits and wardrobes. And it's interesting to see how you fit all of these characters and these outfits that they put you into. I know you had one from, I think, was it the 70s? I think it was.
Yeah,
you were dressed like from the
70s? 69.
Yeah,
1969. It was the press conference for the Apollo mission.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember seeing that picture. I'm like, look at this guy. Who is he? He doesn't look like James Smith.
You know, it's incredible what the costume and makeup people and the work on these big productions can do. I mean, it's just phenomenal the way that, you know, you'll walk in as a group of people and you look totally normal, and you walk out and everybody is straight out of 1969 with the Apollo launch about to happen.
How cool.
And I think that's one of the fun part too, is you get to kind of role play. You're like, here we are. There's, you know, Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong on stage, and you get to take it back in history.
How exciting. How exciting. All right. Well, James, well, that's, you know, it's great to hear your stories. Yeah, I love hearing about your time on Jurassic World and Stranger Things. And I'm looking forward to seeing you be on my television more and more. So
I'll do my best.
So I'm rooting for you. So, so just let everybody know where they can, I don't know, maybe see your content on social media, or if somebody wants to get a hold of you, or somebody wants to cast you, you know, do you have any way somebody can get a hold of you?
Not really. I mean, I just kind of do it for fun. It's one of those things. It's just a fun hobby. Definitely you can look me up on Facebook for kicks and giggles. Set up a IMDb so I can keep track of the different things that I get to be a part of. I think the biggest thing I'd say, you know, if this sounds exciting to you, go out and do it. It's not hard to do. You know, all of the background casting calls, they post those on Facebook. You can find them, respond to them, and get on set. It's a blast. It doesn't take any special skill. at all, other than just, you know, the willingness to be professional when you're on set. But it's a blast. So if it sounds exciting to you, go for it. You won't regret it.
All right, James. Well, thanks so much for all that information. And then also, if anybody has any more questions or anything at all, we have a Jurassic Collective voicemail, actually a Jurassic Collective hotline. So if you ever want to be on the show, give me a call or a text. The number is 281-937-2596. Again, that is 281-937-2596. And Mr. Hollywood, thanks so much for being on the show, and I will see you online.
Hey, it was a blast. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks for listening to the Jurassic Collective podcast. Support the show by hitting that subscribe button and check out Jurassic Fic on YouTube and Instagram for more Jurassic material. I will see you guys next week.